I'm Chris Avina. I'm with American Outdoor News, and today we have Robert Faxon and Dustin Wallace from Faxon Arms. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. We're glad to be here.
Our pleasure.
Now, it was really great to actually finally meet you guys in person in Vegas this year, and your line is amazing. Really, it has come a long way in a short period of time.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure meeting you out there in person and being able to actually show you some of the product. And SHOT Show is always a crazy time, but it's a decent time to at least get a smattering of what it is we have to offer.
It really is. Really is. Now, starting out, you didn't start out as a gun company. You didn't even start out as a gun parts company. You started out, previous generation, dad and uncle started out as a machine shop.
We did, yes, that's exactly right, in 1978.
Yeah, so Robert's second generation, I suppose, if you want to put it that way, and his dad, Bob, and his uncle, Barry, have been in business together since 1978, and they have an older brother, David, who was kind of the original that your grandfather helped out to get their first shop, which we're based in Greater Cincinnati, and their original shop was in a little part of Cincinnati called Northside. Uh-huh. And they had a small, gosh, what was it? 4,500.
With the big addition they put on.
Yeah, for like a 4,000 square foot plus, a little shop down there. And they originally bought the building and I think at least a machine or two from the original company, which was Weichel Arms, and they did muzzle loader barrels. And uh-huh. So they bought the shop to do automotive work. And the kind of joke from his grandfather was, if it ever goes south with automotive, you could, drill some gun barrels. And then fast forward to 2012. Mm-hmm. We started making gun barrels and then some. But yeah, Faxon Machining is still around. Bob is still acting CEO over there, and the other siblings have kind of retired out. So he took that private equity a couple of years ago, and they're doing amazing things. And we used to share facility space with them. So Faxon Machining birthed Faxon Firearms. We just are coming up on 12 years as a brand. And up until 2020, we shared facility space. Now, granted, we weren't still in the 4,000 square foot shop in Northside. We had moved.
You've grown a little bit, Northside.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And so they were growing, we were growing, and so it was time for us to get our own facility. So they were, they're just, 5 minutes down the road from us here in northern Cincinnati. So they continue to do a lot of the DOD and aerospace and some medical work, but it's that same pedigree that, seeps into Faxon Firearms now 12 years later, here we are kind of on our own.
So, Robert, your family has always been firearm enthusiasts, firearm collectors,
yes.
Active, going to the range, shooting, hunting, and the like. What made them finally take the step into manufacturing?
Yeah, well, it really all goes back to when my dad was, first off, Faxon Machining was slow on work, and he knew that he needed a product to fill the machines because he had them. And he was watching the military channel with my brother and I, and he saw that the AK ranked number one for best battle weapons, and wow, the AR-15 ranked number two. And by day, he's a defense contractor, so he makes bombs. And he looked at us, he goes, that's so messed up. I don't ever try to design the second best bomb. So he went on the kitchen table with us, and he drew up the ARAC 21. And then from there, it took about a year for an actual shooting representation, a prototype, and that was 2012, and that's when Faxon Firearms technically started.
Uh-huh.
And it all began with the ARAC 21, which is a long stroke gas system.
That's a mouthful.
Fill it up, or at that point, yes. That's what started it all. And then that went into the barrels because people were asking them, like, hey, where are you getting your barrels made for this ARAC? And the answer was baffling to my dad. He's like, I'm sorry, we made them. What are you trying to get at? He's like, you made them? He's like, yeah, we've been drilling holes for 40 years. We drill holes that are 40 feet long in 60,000 pound parts. Yeah, this is easy.
Yeah.
And then from there, progressively, the barrel brand grew and people knew us for an aftermarket barrel.
Yeah.
So that's really how the barrel thing started. It was not a targeted segment of the market that they were going after.
Right. And the ARAC, you know, was a proprietary patented product. And like Robert said, long stroke gas piston system. It really combines the best features of the AR and the AK into one. You know, the complete upper is really where the magic is on that product, and it drops on any mil-spec AR-15 lower. So that was really our first product, and Robert's absolutely right. I mean, at the beginning, not really knowing that there was such a market for aftermarket barrels and upgraded barrels and doing match series items and things like that. So, and when you think about the ARAC too, that's a proprietary barrel as well. So,
yeah.
You know, either you figure out how to make it in house or, you know, you're going to end up spending a lot of money on prototyping, you know, with outside companies. And, you know, and it was interesting because like Robert said, you know, work was slow because they were kind of coming out of the doldrums of automotive manufacturing, OEM manufacturing, kind of moving off seas and
in the recession,
real low cost, and the recession hits and everything. And so at that same time, they're working on getting fax and machining into more DOD and, like you said, like the defense contracting, bomb and ordnance making, and then also starting up fax and firearms to keep the business afloat. And you know, fortunately, we're in a place that both are doing, you know, successful, and people like me are able to join in, you know, to the family business as well. So we moved from
the timing really couldn't have been better. And the technology and design really is in the upper. I mean, the lower to a modern sporting rifle is pretty basic. You know, everything's in the upper.
It's 100%. You're exactly correct.
Right. And so, you know, the ARAC really kicked it off. And, you know, now as the business grew, and obviously the pandemic hits and the run on barrels and parts and complete firearms. Actually, I had just started. I started with the company in the fall of 2019. I went to my first SHOT Show. We're flying home. We see all these people with masks getting off the plane.
Oh, God.
We're like, what is this COVID thing? And you know, we get back and, you know, a couple weeks go by and all of a sudden all of our dealers are calling us. You know, we'll take everything you have kind of situation. And we had just launched our complete AR-15 rifle line. And we were hoping to sell 500 guns in the first year because we weren't really known as a full firearms manufacturer. The pandemic helped blow the doors off of that. And then we were, you know, able to start saturating and specializing and kind of putting our own spin on things. But through all that, you know, the ARAC was not quick enough to produce during that gun run time. And so we spent the last couple of years kind of re-engineering some of the assembly processes and pieces for it to get it back to scale and get it back in production. And so we're, you know, happy to finally say that, you know, they've been shipping again since fall of last year and ship out basically every week now. And we're spooling out more and more production to make sure that those could get back into the market. And through those efforts, we've been able to lower the price on it as well, which has been a big deal. And because we've always, you know, taken to heart being a high value proposition brand. You know, we're not a bargain basement company, but you also don't have to refinance your house to, you know, buy something from us. And we really stand behind that that quality, the innovation, and the service, and what it means for, you know, everybody in the firearms industry.
Well, the truth of the matter is, and I think this holds true to a lot of companies, if you actually hold the product and really take a look at it, you know where your money's going. You can really tell a quality product from something that was just thrown together. And, you know, I think COVID really came at the right time for you guys. It really jump-started your company.
Yeah, you know what? And sometimes there's nothing that could kill a company like success. You know, so being able to, you know, kind of go through that and capitalize on it and also, you know, have a firm footing for the next phase. You know, we saw in the last year and a half, 2 years, that pendulum kind of really swing back. You know, it wasn't just the same three or four SKUs and parts that people wanted. And, you know, the interest opens up and so many new gun owners, and then just that proliferation, you know, has been huge. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of manufacturers and brands and even more importantly, you know, dealers that did not, you know, survive coming, you know, out of the pandemic. Either they didn't survive during it, or when everything came back, they weren't able to keep on their feet. And so, you know, being able to be agile enough as a business to understand that once in a lifetime situations really do come around once in a lifetime, you know, that's a big deal. And so, you know, decisions had to be made and stands had to be taken about how we serve our customers, how we serve our dealers. You know, our website was out of stock for like 2 years. It was a pain, you know, and you're just kind of getting trashed. But we were making more product than we ever had. And, you know, so now as kind of the dust has settled around that, really diving back into new product and innovation and getting flagship products back on the shelves, and kind of opening up what we do, you know, has certainly been a challenge, but a refreshing, you know, adventure as well.
Now, how'd you come up with the 8.6 blackout?
So 8.6 blackout as a cartridge, as a round, was actually developed by the folks at QLLC, so Kevin Brittingham and his team. And, you know, they were the original brains behind the 300 blackout.
They actually more commonly known.
Exactly. Yeah. And so 8.6, they originally got to us because they needed somebody to make the barrel. And what some people don't always know, and so I try to mention it just about in every interview and every tour that we do here, is, you know, we're one of only, you know, 15 or so manufacturers in the U.S. that make our barrels from bar stock. So we're not just drilling and or, you know, turning down somebody else's blank.
Yeah.
And what comes with that is the ability to kind of engineer and do some unique things with machining and keep the quality in-house. But for 8.6, they had specified a 1-in-3 twist barrel, and they specifically wanted it to be a button rifled barrel. So for reference, you know, a standard like 5.56 NATO, that's going to be like a 1-in-8 twist, you know, and 300 blackout could go from 1-in-5 to 1-in-8 and so on. So 1-in-3 is an incredibly fast twist rate, and it can be very hard on machines if you're not sure what you're doing, especially at the beginning. And, you know, Kevin and his team opened it up. They want the round to take off. You know, they want this kind of 8.6 package to take off. So they came to us to make some barrels, but they encouraged us and other, you know, brands that were involved in the development to make their own branded, you know, 8.6 blackout parts. And so we started making barrels for it. We made, you know, complete rifles for it. Bolt action, part of how we got into bolt action was because we saw the response from 8.6 and we knew that we apparently had a place at the table and bolt action that we, you know, had not previously known. So it was really kind of like an open OEM contract that really got us into it. And then fortunately it's been very successful and we've become synonymous, you know, with 8.6 blackout as a round. And for something that's been a Wildcat cartridge for 2+ years,
it's just pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing because you don't normally see Wildcats take off like this, and especially have the longevity in the market without that SAMI specification or what have you.
I've gotten that reaction from the one that you donated to DSC for their auction. People would look at it, they'd pick it up, 8.6 blackout. Isn't it a 300? No, it's not a 300.
No.
The 300's big brother.
Yeah. What they did, and it was really ingenious, is, you know, realizing that rotational energy can be impacted on the target. So rotational energy doesn't have to be just about stabilizing the projectile, That energy can be transferred to the target. So, you know, a 12-inch barrel with subsonic rounds, a 338 projectile that's taken down, you know, buffalo and zebra.
Kudu.
I mean, all kinds of stuff. And it's relatively quiet, especially suppressed. It's ear safe. You know, as far as for something that large, you know, the felt recoil isn't so crazy. It's pretty remarkable, and it's nice to see some more ammo manufacturers taking hold of it. But what a community of reloaders and just that all this sort of stuff. It's been pretty amazing to see what the community has done. Make it take hold.
You've taken it to Africa. You've done some.
Kevin, personally.
Kevin is the one that does that.
We've taken it hog hunting and, you know, various other things.
Antelope.
We've done, you know, a couple of different TV shows with it and ballistic gel tests and things like that. But, yeah, really that rotational energy really does something, for that round.
Do you both get out in the field, do any hunting, or it's mainly three-gun tactical shooting? Yeah, the hunter, Robert.
Hunts. Yeah. Robert hunts.
Yeah, I got the bug.
Yeah. I'm. You don't necessarily want me to be a competition shooter. I know where my strengths lie. Part of the reason I came to Faxon was because, I grew up. My father was and is an industrial specialist, so I really have an affinity for American manufacturing. That's what drew me to Faxon, a lot of military in my family and LEOs. So we always shot. I always joke with the guys in the office that are avid shooters. I was like, I was just a hillbilly shooter, that was me. But I have an affinity for American manufacturing and family business, as cheesy as it can sound, this is a really American dream type company.
Not cheesy at all. Stand behind that.
And that's what draws me to it. And the Faxons are great people, and I think we've shown that, you know, there's quite a bit of brand reach and people respond to our products, and so that's very rewarding. But no, you absolutely don't want me. When we go to the range, when we take people to the range, there's a range by us that it was called Lake Bailey. I think they have new ownership now. They used to have just an old wrecked car out on the range, like that you could also shoot at. And so all my guys are like trying to dial in. They got their, you know, scopes on. They're just trying to figure out everything. They want to get a real sharpshooter. I'm like, give me the full auto and I'm shooting this car. that's what I want to do.
Now, Rob, let me ask you this. You know, as a hunter, you know, most people go into the store, they pick out the rifle, the caliber that they want for any particular game, they go, they sight it in, get accustomed to the rifle, get it just the way they want it, they go on the hunt, they take their animal, and they feel great. How does it feel as a manufacturer to build your own gun to your own specifications, get it the way you want it, go out on the hunt, and still take your animal? Is that a different type of feeling?
Yeah, I would say it's similar. I just did it. I just did that this year. Now in Ohio, we are limited with straight wall. So I built a 350 Legend. And I built it up, got it. I used actually a 12-inch. I used an SBR for it. And then sighted it in, I put a Trigicon ACOG on it and was able to get a nice buck with it. Yes, it did feel nice. It was a very, very fun. I've done it one other time. I did it with a 308 build that I had. I put our barrel and our BCG in it, but
yeah,
it wasn't
out of state.
Yeah, that was. Oh yeah, no, I don't want to go to jail for this. I was in Indiana, a free state, unlike Ohio. It's an incredible feeling, though, Chris. Yes. And I will note the 350 performed quite well. That deer dropped immediately. I was very happy with how it did. That was my first 350 kill.
Yeah, we have a couple of his trophies hanging in our office across the hall.
Yeah. We're working on a new podcast studio, so we can actually incorporate a little bit more into it. But
very nice. It's actually really nice when you don't have to track the deer when it drops where you shoot it.
Unbelievable. it's so nice.
So you also build rimfires as well.
We do, yeah. So we actually started the rimfire line pretty much in the heat of the pandemic. It was it was interesting because, you know, I'm sure here in, you know, the coming months we could get Bob on the show with you too. But, you know, Bob always, you know, would tell us how pretty much every AR guy also probably has a 1022, you know, yeah. and their gun safe. And, you know, it's fun. A lot of people get their start, you know, with rimfire. We also, you know, one of our trademarks is the Fellowship of Firearms, and we believe that the multi-generational, you know, relationships that are formed and the memories that are formed with these. And rimfire just seemed like a natural place yeah. for us. And some other folks from the outside had recommended it to us, and obviously we have the capabilities to make the barrels. So, yeah, we started with the barrel line for it. That's generally how we start most things. We start with the barrel. We see how that does, and then we start, you know, adding things to it. Yeah. And so we started with, I believe, you know, kind of like six total kind of makeups of the barrels and launched those during the pandemic. And then as those took hold, then we opened it up, started doing receivers in-house. We started doing bolts. And then we started doing the complete firearms. And most recently, we do barreled receivers for 1022 as well.
Okay.
So that's been a fun one. One of my most notable memories of it was, you know, shortly after, I think after we started making the receivers for it, we had a customer send us an email. And it was photos of him and his son building up a rimfire. With our parts, and it was a very exciting thing for them because the father builds up ARs with our parts, and then he was working on this project with his son.
Nice.
And which I think that's basically the DNA of this place. And then also, you know, we've gotten to sponsor some collegiate practical shooting teams. So Oklahoma State, Michigan State, Florida State all use, you know, Faxon products and their rimfire builds. And so that's been a fun one. That was certainly kind of more of a passion project, as well as expanding the brand, you know, beyond Black Rifle.
Sure, sure. Now you sell not just barrels and fully, you know, assembled rifles. You sell the uppers and parts as well. So I think people are getting more into their own personal builds as much as going out and buying it. Have you found that that end of the business picking up more?
100%. And you know, it's interesting as a manufacturer that has been known for parts. You know, we kind of have an MO that we want to be more known as a complete, you know, firearms manufacturer. And by that, not just the complete guns, but, you know, kind of a sole source, you know, for all these parts, whether they're a complete build or somebody specking something out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We really saw it notably over the last couple of years in the pistol parts. You know, so we do have a line of complete handguns, but, you know, we've made barrels, you know, for compact and full size for a while. And then a couple of years ago, we started making subcompact barrels and pistol compensators. And the thing that was very interesting about that was, you know, if you would have said, you know, 5-6 years ago that aftermarket subcompact barrels would be a thing, I think most people would have laughed about it. You know, you don't shoot them in competition. They're not really the Gucci Glock or anything like that.
Yeah.
But as we saw more and more people buy their first guns during the pandemic, a lot of them went to everyday carry, you know, style subcompact pistols. And as they became comfortable with them, wanted to upgrade them, wanted to personalize them. You know, we do drop-in pistol barrels that have tighter tolerances, than OEM, so better lockup, more ammo capability. And now fast forward to now there's everyday carry competitions, you know, where people are, you know, getting these things out. And so that's been one too that we've seen, you know, a lot of growth in that, again, even 5 or 6 years ago may have not been a place in the market.
Do you find the people doing their own builds, that customer base, do you find it going to more states that are more restrictive, or it's all over?
It depends on the part. You know, and that's something we always have to balance. You know, we have a legal team, an outside legal team that helps us with a lot of those things. And then, you know, we have a staff member here that half of his responsibility, you know, is our compliance. And, and I think that's something that if anybody is not familiar with what it's like to be on the inside of the firearms industry, the compliance pieces are giant. You know, the taxes, the shipping rules, all those things that we have to do to protect ourselves, how you market, you know, can be a, you know, can be a an opportunity for people who are very much against firearms to come at you.
Yeah.
So you have to be very mindful of that. The biggest ones in the last couple of years are Illinois, you know, was a big hit. You know, the very vague in the wording of some of those new laws and restrictions. So, you know, we had to cut them off totally from direct to consumer sales. Now, fortunately, there are dealers there, but you know, as far as our legality and what that means for us, you know, it was unfortunate. But you know, we had to cut it off, and obviously, Washington has seen a lot. Lots of New England states have a bunch of different rules. So, yeah, that's something that we have to actually on the back end, even just in our order processing systems, always have to try to keep up on and seek legal counsel for. But, yes, in general, in most of those states, it's easier to get parts because a lot of them, you know, and even in like Canada, because we, you know, we work with exporters as well. You know, a lot of I am not a lawyer, okay, so look some of this stuff up. But from the layman's terms, you know, a lot of them have grandfathered in lowers or what have you. But you still have to be cognizant of barrel length, threaded versus non-threaded, what type of muzzle device, you know, no flash hiders in certain areas, things like that. So, yeah, there's really a lot that goes into that compliance of making sure that, you know, we're staying well within the bounds.
Yeah, it's something that you really got to stay on top of, especially that things are changing on a monthly, weekly, and daily basis with some of these states.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the last year, we're coming up on one full year of having factory representatives out in the field, and a lot of our guys currently are out in the Western 13 states, and with California. You know, California has all their own restrictions as well, too. So that also does things to us on the product development side and the sales and marketing side of making sure that we have products for these people in these different regions, in these different areas. And that's why, fortunately, products like the ARAC are really great in places like California, because, we can ship them with a muzzle brake and not a flash hider. It's a non-serialized asset. So all of those things bode well for it. So it is pretty unique to see, kind of where different products take off and kind of take hold, regionally, as well as just, general populace and what gets written about in magazines or what have you.
Sure. Well, we're running out of time, but first off, what's next for you, and where can we find you?
Well, so we launched our bolt action line last year, so you'll definitely want to check that out, the FX7 bolt action line. That's one of the newest items, and then we have a new series of handguns that are going to be launching later this year, and then just normal kind of proliferation of current product offerings that we're very excited about. And then we launched a new brand called Facts and Outdoors as well, which does soft goods.
Yep.
So never a dull moment here, but you could find all of that information at factsandfirearms.com, and all of our social profiles are listed there as well. So at Facts and Firearms on 99% of those networks. But yeah, factsandfirearms.com is where you could find the whole host of information.
All right. Well, I look forward to having you back on where we could talk about your line of Facts and Outdoors. Great products. I've tested some. I've seen some. And we talked about it in Vegas. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Chris.
I appreciate your time.